You're listening to Diplomatic Dispatch, brought to you by IdeaFarm Malaysia. Get updates on our upcoming episodes and programs via our website at www.idfr.gov.my or follow us on our social media at IdeaFarm Malaysia.
Ladies and gentlemen, listeners from around the world, welcome to another series of Diplomatic Dispatch. Food is the universal language that unites people. It also has an incredible power to bring people together, transcending borders, cultures and languages. It's not just about satisfying our appetites, it's about forging connections, building bridges and also fostering understanding. With a pinch of Malaysian spices and a spoonful of pride in serving the national cuisine, gastrodiplomacy is a tool for Malaysian diplomats abroad to enhance Malaysia's relations with other countries. I'm Ahmad Faizal Hilmi Muhammad Syarul Hashri, and I will be your host for this session on the topic Gastrodiplomacy, when food becomes a soft power tool for diplomacy. Today, we are delving deep into the world of gastrodiplomacy, where cuisine becomes a catalyst for international relations and peace. To explore the soft diplomacy of winning hearts and minds beyond borders through the science of gastro, Diplomatic Dispatch has invited Yang Berbahagia, Datin Gauri Kirubamurti, to share her experiences in showcasing national Malaysian delicacies abroad. Given your vast experience in promoting diplomacy through food, we are immensely excited to hear more from you. Before we dissect our topic even further, Datin, let me kickstart our session by asking your opinion on why is food diplomacy important? The floor is yours, Datin.
A very good afternoon, Faizal, and to all listeners. And thank you for having me here today. And I would be happy to share my experience to this. As you said, like, why is food diplomacy important?
Yes.
Yeah. So before we start to dive into the importance of food diplomacy, perhaps it may be helpful to share some basic definitions for the benefit of our listeners. Many new terms have emerged: gastrodiplomacy, culinary diplomacy, food diplomacy, etc. Some use these terms interchangeably, while others have distinct views of these terms. However, subject matter experts have agreed that these are all subsets of a wider cultural diplomacy. And we all agree that of which food diplomacy is often used loosely to sum up anything related to food. So food diplomacy simply means to the use of, or rather using food as a tool or instrument of promoting goodwill and building relationships. This takes various forms, ranging from food promotions abroad, such as participating in food bazaars, food festivals, conducting cooking demos, and even to the extent of developing fusion cuisine. Yeah. So, and why is food diplomacy important then? Food has historically played an important role in official encounters, negotiations, and cultural exchanges among nations. And food has the power to bring people together, as you just mentioned as well. And sharing a meal can create a sense of camaraderie and understanding. For centuries, the dining table has been recognized as a unique forum where negotiations can be fought, differences settled, and relationships sealed. So, be it a state banquet or a low-key embassy meal, food and dining together tends to demand voices to be lowered, as I mentioned, and swords left at the door. Yeah? So, in this context of diplomacy, food can be used to open doors, to break down barriers, and promote healthy discussions with which create a more positive and productive relationship between not just individuals and families, but also communities, organizations, and nations. By sharing their food and culinary culture, a country can showcase its heritage and promote a better understanding of its people and traditions. This can be a powerful way to build trust, improve diplomatic relations internationally.
Yes, I agree that indeed, diplomacy does go beyond formal settings, and sometimes informal diplomacy, such as gastro diplomacy, actually play pivotal roles in enhancing people-to-people connection.
Correct.
Datin, in your experiences, which countries often use food diplomacy as a tool to enhance their countries?
Well, this may not be exactly my place to comment on this, but from what I see, it is mostly used by middle power or smaller countries who would prefer to use the soft power tool approach as they may not have the military might or the money to flex their muscle.
That is true.
So here are some examples that come to mind beyond Malaysia. There's Thailand, our neighbor, with their tom yum and pad thai. Yes. And of course, Taiwan with their stinky tofu. Yeah. So yeah, I mean, these are basically countries that use food diplomacy as a key tool, or rather their diplomacy toolkit.
Well, it is interesting to know that other countries are also using food diplomacy as a tool.
Yeah, there are many actually.
There are many, yes. Each having their own unique
style and approach.
Yeah. Yes. Datin, we often hear that the way to a man's heart is through his stomach. Mm-hmm. But do you think that gastro diplomacy can also influence relations with other countries?
Oh, yes, I certainly do. In my experience, I've seen how food and dining experiences help to open doors, like I mentioned earlier. It creates better understanding and of one's history, people and culture. So like for example, in Chile, lemongrass, coconut milk and even ginger was made available only in the late 1990s due to the popularity of Thai food. And this boosts trade between Thailand and Chile, particularly because Thailand dominates the supply of these ingredients, which are integral to its cuisine, basically creating a demand to market their products.
That's true.
By contrast, Taiwan's promotion of its stinky tofu and bubble tea, if you may remember, is not motivated to improve trade, from what I understand, as they do not have a very big agricultural sector. Instead, they aim to create an international awareness of Taiwan as a distinct entity. So, from these two examples alone, we can see the breadth of roles played by food diplomacy in advancing national interests.
Yes. Thank you, Datin, for that explanation.
Yeah.
Before we talk more about the role of gastro diplomacy, allow me to ask another question related to our cuisines.
Mm-hmm.
Malaysia has many different cuisines, and yet we don't seem to be making the impact that we should at the international stage. For example, we've heard of the Indonesian nasi goreng and the Singaporean chicken rice. Why are we not up there with the rest of them? What's your opinion on that?
Okay, I'm afraid I don't wholly agree to that statement, because what makes one think that we are not making the impact at the international stage? Maybe our style may be different, and yes, we have a long way to go compared to some of the other countries, especially our neighbours like Thailand, where they are very focused on their food diplomacy. But our rendang, satay, nasi lemak and even teh tarik and cendol have made tremendous inroads to making an impact and won many hearts and minds.
Oh,
so I believe that we are making an impact.
That's good.
Abroad.
It's good to
yeah.
know that, I think. Yeah. Moving on to the next question. Malaysia is a multicultural country, and this also has been perceived that our strength is our food is actually our strength, and it's worth showcasing to the world. You've been abroad most of your married life to Yang Berbahagia Datuk Ganesan, and finally as the spouse of the ambassador in Vienna. What are the dishes that you think we should showcase in order to capitalize on the multitude of cuisines that we have in Malaysia?
Well, you're absolutely right, Faisal. We are indeed a multicultural country and should be proud to showcase our rich history and culture to the world. My husband and I have taken a lot of effort in coming up with a menu for our international guests, especially when we are abroad. We cater to the palates by understanding their dietary restrictions and also cultural norms. This is where cultural intelligence comes to play. As Malaysians and also South Asians in general, we don't historically have a fine dining gastronomical culture. We actually hover between fine cuisine to street food or hawker food, you see. So it's basically a gathering that doesn't look into the fine dining aspects so much, but more on the food and the delicacies. Yeah. So basically, some guests can't take spicy food, while others may not fancy soupy dishes. Because we've come across guests at, of course, not a Malaysian event, but another event, where they did not actually enjoy looking at food that was very liquidy. Yeah. So, and there are also some who require wine pairing for a fine dining experience. Whereas others expect small bites when picturing street food. They don't expect a plate or a banana leaf, or, you know, they expect small little finger food. Yeah. So this dynamic gives rise to several trade-offs with our food diplomacy strategy. This reminds me of the incident a few years ago when a Malaysian contestant on MasterChef UK was criticized by the judges for her rendang not being crispy enough.
Oh, yes, I remember that.
Yeah, I think lots of us remember that, and we were not very happy at all. Is it worth making rendang crispy to please a British MasterChef? How bland can sambal be before it stops being sambal?
Yeah.
So how much of alterations and adjustments should you make? So the nuance involved in answering these questions is what earns the moniker diplomacy for food diplomacy itself.
Okay.
In my experience, answering these questions are less of a science than an art, and optimal responses are highly context dependent, and that is to say, the best approach depends on the audience that will be trying our food. So the first thing is you must understand who your audience are.
Yes.
And from there, you work and see what best, not to shock them. You know, you don't want it to be a culture shock for your guests.
Yes.
So you want to gradually introduce your cuisine. So if I may share my experience, New York was highly cosmopolitan when we were in New York, yeah? We didn't have to alter our cuisine very much, as New Yorkers were already exposed to diverse cultures and were quite adventurous where food was concerned. Chileans, by contrast, when we're Chile, view bread as a basic staple that must be served at every meal. Therefore, we substituted bread with roti canai instead when we hosted them. So Austrians, like most Europeans, loved fine exquisite food. Thus, our signature street food, satay, was elevated to fine dining status by serving it in a shot glass. Luckily, our rich culinary tradition endows us with an ample toolkit of dishes that, with a little creativity, can be readily adapted for almost any situation.
So you mentioned earlier, you have to do your research first in order to know
definitely
what to serve and prepare
definitely
for the guests.
Yeah, it is actually quite crucial
yeah,
before you have guests over, or else your dinner party may not turn out the way you wanted to.
Yes, definitely.
Or, you know, people may not touch your food.
Yeah.
Or people may feel a little overwhelmed.
That's true.
By the amount.
Yeah.
Because we, as Malaysians, love you know, large varieties, huge amount, especially buffets, you know, but we can't do this all the time, especially when you're abroad. So you have to understand who your guests are.
Definitely.
Who are you planning to feed or
yes,
promote your food to. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, Datin. Those cuisines you have mentioned earlier are definitely worth showcasing at an international stage.
Yeah.
Malaysia, with its rich and diverse culinary heritage, I believe definitely has the potential to advance significantly in the realm of gastro diplomacy.
Definitely.
Yeah. So there you have it, dear listeners, the delightful and enlightening journey through the world of gastro diplomacy. I hope you've been inspired as I have been by the stories and insights shared today by Yang Berbahagia Datin Gauri Kirubamurti. We've learned how food has the incredible ability to transcend borders, foster understanding, and bringing people together in ways that basically traditional diplomacy often cannot. From culinary exchanges at the international summits to the vibrant fusion of flavors in our own neighborhoods, gastro diplomacy is indeed a soft power tool with the potential to make our world a more harmonious place. I also wish to once again extend my deepest gratitude to Yang Berbahagia, Datin Gauri Kirubha Murthy, for joining us and shedding light on the power of cuisine in diplomacy. Your passion for food and diplomacy is truly inspiring. As we conclude today's diplomatic dispatch, don't forget to start exploring new cuisines, share meals with friends from different backgrounds, and remember that food can be a bridge to connect us all. Thank you.
Thank you.
Tune in for more episodes of the IDFR podcast, Diplomatic Dispatch. Thank you for listening.